Hosts Dr. Kevin and Dr. Zahara.
Hey guys, happy Thursday.
Yes, Thursday night football. So if we see if Patrick Mahomes can run in regards to his ankle.
I think that's what you should start a podcast on.
I know. So the thing is, you know, we talk about today's about peptides. And so hopefully one of the peptides that they've been utilizing to help regenerate his tissue can be incorporated or other regenerative injections. So
we'll have to tag him in said post.
I know. Well, exactly.
Happy Thursday, everyone, and welcome to Life Enhancement Medicine Hour. I'm Dr. Sundermeyer.
I'm Dr. Walls.
And as always, we are here with Infusion Health, and you can find out information about us at infusionhealth.org, or you can find us on Instagram as well. So don't hesitate to like us there. We do all of our fun, entertaining posts.
Mm-hmm. And I think Dr. Sundermeyer also has the number, so if you want to call in and ask questions.
Yes, I do. So the phone number, if you would like to call and ask a question, is 844-390-8255. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, and so just quick some stuff about our practice. So obviously we were a brick and mortar practice, so we do everything online now for all of our telemedicine. So stay up to date. Our new website hopefully should be coming on up, talking about integrative telemedicine, how we actually see patients without a waiting room, so you don't have to worry about other people, like I said, sniffling noses or kids running around.
This is true. Or you don't have to worry about your kids running around, which is always a positive thing, I think, sometimes.
Don't have to get the babysitter.
This is true.
So it works.
Just have to schedule nap time accordingly.
Yeah, we're excited. We're excited about how the progress of our practice has gone in regards to that, where we can still see people. We're not limited by, obviously, insurance. We spend a quality of time with people.
Yep.
So I think that is fantastic because it fits well right into the talk today, talking about peptides and life enhancement medicine.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited about this because this is something that I've been slowly delving into, but it's going to be a little bit of a different conversation today in our talk. This one is going to be more of an interview Q&A with Dr. Wallace, because Dr. Wallace has actually been the one taking the primary education in peptide medicine and really teaching me how to implement and integrate peptide therapy with my patients personally, and obviously even with myself. So I'm really excited because I think I'm going to probably drill him as much as you guys want me to. So I'm super excited about this.
No, see, I have the lamp. So if it does,
we'll make the whole room dark behind you and just the lamp in your face.
Tell us the secrets.
So I think my first question today for you, Dr. Wallace, is what are peptides, first of all? Let's start with that general statement.
So peptides are amino acid sequences that are naturally occurring into our body that obviously unlock other processes to start happening. So the easiest terms where it basically latches onto receptor, that receptor will get stimulated, creates another response, and then that cascades into other responses.
Okay.
So peptides are naturally found in the body. I do believe insulin is one of them. So everybody's heard of insulin.
Okay.
In that regards. And so the use of peptides in that regards has been great in regards to helping people out because it can be very specific in regards to what action that you actually want to occur. So along with a lot of other processes that we do in the foundational health, you can add in peptides specifically to go and help with the whole totality. So with that being said, so obviously, you know, we're talking about peptides today, but obviously we want to make sure that, you know, when we're talking about peptides, you go see someone that's specifically trained in peptides.
Oh yeah.
And not just sitting there saying, hey, utilize this, and you get it online.
Yeah, definitely. Make sure you know where you're getting your peptides from. There's been some really fun stories about them never working or working weirdly. Obviously, you are injecting a substance into your body that's going to cause change and effect. And there are a lot of websites that you can find them on just and purchase them. And there's just not enough regulation right now about them. So there are really great trained practitioners out there that can, like Dr. Wallace, treat you and properly give you what is necessary, not just something that Google said would work, right? There are so many. I mean, I think every day you come to me and tell me about a new peptide that you've read or done research on, or you learned about through the International Peptide Society, which is where he's getting his training from. But there's too many. There's too many for
Google
to really, really educate you properly.
So there are around 700 to I think 1,000 that are in formulation in regards to being utilized, being tested. A lot of these have what is called a GRAS status, generally recognized as safe through the FDA.
Okay.
They've obviously have studies behind it. There has been no basically adverse outcomes in regards to some of their use. But there's obviously you have to have a whole case. It's like this is not a standalone treatment. You can't sit there and say, well, I have an autoimmune disease and I'm just going to take this and I can still have a very bad habit.
Right. No, it's a piece of a treatment, not the whole treatment itself.
Correct. So again, so peptides and amino acid sequences. So they're all put together in regards to 15 chains, 30 chains. You know, obviously if it gets past a certain part, you know, they still call it a peptide, but now it's actually typically a protein.
Okay.
And so, but we just call it a peptide just because of a certain amino acid sequence. So okay. It's the key that unlocks other processes. Those processes either go to do a couple of things, which I always remember a physician or actually a DC that I learned a lot of nutritional components from. And he says, there's no new physiological processes in the body. It's like mm-hmm. either something that's sped up, that's slowed down, or it's out of sequence with everything on else.
Okay.
So how we incorporate the use of peptides is to obviously speed something up that's slow, you know, slow something down. In regards that's fast, like cancer, obviously fast cell division, and then have it in balance with all the other systems, homeostasis. And so the use of peptides can assist in that whole process and be done fairly safe in regards for the patient. Obviously, safety, you know, and myself and Dr. Sonomar is always first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we don't try to do anything that obviously is going to harm the patient. That's not what our intention is. But you can go ahead and push the limits with utilizing peptides to kind of speed up the processes. If someone comes to us from another practitioner and they've been doing all these other things, sometimes an addition of a peptide or a couple of peptides in combination can actually now tell the body, hey, get back in sequence. Let's speed up. Let's maybe slow down some autoimmunity components.
Okay.
In that regards. And so I think it's a fantastic thing to do. And obviously the routes, you know, we talk about peptide oral, lingual.
Well, before we get into all of that, I'm kind of curious how they're made. Like, how are peptides made at this point in time or created? Yeah.
So like we talked about, accredited pharmacies.
Okay.
Obviously, there are the peptides within the body, so they can synthetically go ahead and make that chain, whether it means like some amino acid sequence, glycine, you know, serine, all these other different types of amino acids that they put together.
Okay.
And the trick is to actually make that peptide stable. And
okay.
So you can have, like I said, a backer on it, a protein that's more stable that can go ahead and be injected into the system. And that's where I think the whole issue in regards to the stability component of a peptide. So I think now with the newer technology, they're putting different protein structures on them, different carrier molecules to actually make the stability more obviously stable. So now when they're doing studies, they have a better efficacy than what the study showed just because the stability of the peptide now is more stable. And so if you inject it into a system, does it just dissipate and become nothing? Does it actually attach to albumin and actually now get transported to all the other sites and create its effect?
Okay.
And so that's where, you know, the majority obviously of peptides are made in the sterile environment.
Okay. Which is important, obviously, since you're injecting it into your body.
Correct.
Or taking it orally.
Exactly.
Okay.
And so making sure that it's an accredited pharmacy and, you know, again, not the Wild West.
Yeah. And tell me, Google definitely can find you Wild West if that was something you wanted, right?
Correct.
Now, at this point in time, would you say that peptides are things like when we're utilizing certain peptides that we are prescribing today, are these things that are commonly found in our systems or are these things that are more enhancing the way the system is working or is it a combination of the two?
Well, it's a combination of the two. So again, so again, we'll just bring up a simple thing, aging. So aging somewhat decreases everything, how metabolism runs, different mitochondrial properties, immune function. And so we have these peptides naturally occurring to the system.
Okay.
But again, if that messenger is very low and it's very depleted in that regards, or it's just not functioning well, it can attach to certain receptors and obviously create more influence and other response. So all these peptides are basically found upon the human frame, because that's obviously where they come from.
Okay.
Obviously manipulated, or, you know, in regards to a growth hormone, we can have a long growth hormone process that obviously if you take it, maybe goes ahead and increases blood sugar, and they can take a couple of sequences off of it, you can actually still have the same effect of the growth hormone, but you're not going to have an increased possible blood glucose with extended use. So they can manipulate it in that manner. But everything that is obviously found into our body is actually what is being made within the lab. It's just that when I say it's synthetic, it's still the same structure, but obviously they can't just rip it out of somebody.
Correct. So they've found it in some form of scientific study in the past,
yeah.
And then they've been able to either replicate it somehow with, like you said, with stability, utilizing certain proteins, connecting the amino acids together is basically what sounds like is happening.
Yeah, so and the things are
naturally secreted or encourage natural secretions in our body to take place, basically.
Yeah, and I think the cool thing is about research, that's all we want to know about. You know, it's like we want to know about what function creates, you know, or a thymus gland, you know, we'll talk about a little bit later, controlling, you know, the TH1 response, TH2. Well, what's the process of that? So they have miraculous people that are way smarter than me sit there and find out how that process is. What happens from this process to this process, from this cell to that cell, and then how can they manipulate this cell to then potentiate the effect of that to create a positive benefit? And so, you know, thank God to those guys, because, you know, I'm not smart enough to do that. It's like I'm smart enough to read the literature, know how to incorporate it, know the safety of it, read studies about the efficacy of it, obviously try it upon ourselves and so can make sure that it works. So we're just trying to manipulate the natural body's pathways in order to create a positive effect.
Like a lot of other medications today, basically, we're utilizing them to enhance the cool thing I think about medicines like peptides is they actually enhance our own body's processes versus causing change and effect in our body that isn't naturally occurring, right?
Yeah, exactly. So like I said, you know, when you take a medication, it changes physiology to override the normal physiology and create an effect that you're changing.
Like a blood pressure medication, right? We're cutting stuff off or we're inhibiting something with pain.
Yeah.
This just increases healing factors, for instance, in certain instances.
Yeah, exactly. So the body still has a mechanism of feedback, understanding it. No, but again, so it's making sure you see someone qualified to run you through screening to make sure that everything's appropriate.
Okay.
So we can see. And so that's why I think I like them. I think Dr. Sonoma likes them because.
I do. I appreciated them when I tried the few that I've tried. I think they're actually pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
Now, with peptide therapy, I feel like we're kind of having a very broad statement with them. This is an introduction to peptide therapy, after all, with this talk. And this is obviously not necessarily meant for practitioners, although I think practitioners that are new in this arena probably will take some really nice key points home today and through our next couple talks as we kind of delve into different peptides and conditions that can be helped with them. But I'm kind of curious, what kind of conditions do you primarily see them being helpful for?
Well, I think both of us kind of like the life enhancement component is obviously longevity. People don't want to go ahead and age.
Right.
So understanding how to fit the peptide into their specific situation, whether it means decreasing, oxidative stress, free radical formation, enhancing mitochondrial. Immune function is probably one of the bigger things as well. So in our environment now, which you'll see the gentleman next hour, Dr. Anderson, talks about viral components and bacteria and mold.
Okay.
How can we go ahead and affect the immune system in that regards? And then, so with those two things, then obviously just healing. So healing from injury.
Okay, that's true.
So, when I say, again, so the thing is you can manipulate anything in regards to peptide, which is very cool, hair growth. But I think the three major categories, when I say longevity, and that incorporates a wider range. So I will just keep it down, which I think we'll talk to you about a little bit later, about how we need to go and make sure that the cell is healthy, it doesn't become a senescent cell, which obviously doesn't pass on to apoptosis to create inflammatory cytokine.
And before you move forward, what is a senescent cell?
So every cell goes through a life cycle, but then it's obviously supposed to die.
Right.
And then if that cell does not die, it just maintains basically in quiescence, which means it's still there. It's actually now is not dividing anymore. It actually will start to create pro-inflammatory cytokines. And so
okay.
The goal is to get that cell to get out. You know, it's like it needs to be dead. You know, so our body is repairing itself every day. So if we have cells that are now replicating division, or, you know, continue the division, and then they stop,
okay.
And now you're going to back up with that. Well, now it's like, well, what's happening? So you have all these inflammatory cytokines happening in the body. So we want to get that cell to be able to actually pass on into its normal process, create apoptosis, obviously create health in the body.
And obviously things like autoimmune disease, cancer, are kind of some of these things that can enhance or are affected by senescent cells, would
you
say?
Yeah.
Okay.
So a senescent cell possibly can lead to a cancerous cell. Obviously increase the inflammatory milieu. You don't actually have cancer cells go ahead and develop.
Okay.
What was one of our famous? It's like morbid matter in the body.
Okay.
So we just want to make sure that the body is actually doing what it needs to do to pass that cell on to proper cellular death.
Which I think is super important for people to realize, and is something that I like to make a note of. Like, all of our cells have a natural life cycle. We live forever thanks to our cells that naturally replicate. Our skin sloughs off on a regular basis, right? We have intestinal cells that live for 7 days. Our red blood cells have a 120-day lifespan between immature red blood cells to fully mature. You know, so I think it's important that people do realize that if these cells hang out too long, that a big chunk of their inflammatory conditions or their medical conditions could be even due to these cells, would you say?
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I would simply say 100%. So obviously we did a lovely talk about life and human medicine, and you know, we talked about that, the eight-week limit.
Right.
These two cells are supposed to divide a certain amount of time, and then, you know, they obviously die off. But one of the flaws of that study was, and the fibroblasts, they kept on putting material in it to keep the cells alive. So they technically said that, well, obviously cells can live forever if you get the right environment. That wasn't
right.
And so cells do have a normal division and they're supposed to pass on. But we can manipulate that with certain peptides. And that's where the anti-aging process comes along, because we can actually increase that from 30 possibly divisions all the way up into 60. So there are some ways to go ahead and manipulate that. For our clients that want to go ahead and feel optimal, want to have the slowing of the aging process, which, you know, I call life enhancing medicine.
Okay.
Which we call life enhancing medicine.
Right.
So you can go ahead and manipulate that basically process. But again, so I think the majority of the people, longevity, immune problems, and then, like I said, healing in the body. But man, we can do everything. Better skin. You know, all these things can be cooked with peptides. It just depends. You know, like Dr. Sundamar said, we could probably do a podcast once a week for probably a year and talk about all the peptides that we could do specifically to go ahead and help people out and get down to the really individual, you know, the healing properties that increases BDGF and all these other things to help the body.
Well, I think instead of going through each peptide, what I'd actually like to do is go through different systems or different health components, which I think we're going to make up over the next, you know, I think either one additional or two additional podcasts or radio shows. So we can talk about just different diseases and different disease states, or even just different topics in health that peptides can positively improve. And of course, like we talked about initially, peptides are an adjunct. They're a supportive component, but everything that you do, I mean, it's like you have to make sure that your body is ready to receive these things, or it's a use it or lose it kind of concept. If you're not doing all the other positive things to help support your system, this is also just, you know, it could help a little bit, but it probably wouldn't be as significant as if you were, you know, eating cleanly or avoiding your food allergens or being aware of detoxification, things like that. So this is not something that I think you can just inject and, you know, go on your merry way, or take a pill and go on your merry way about and not change a thing, right?
Right.
Well, with that statement, because we're talking, I'd like actually to focus on immune function, kind of focusing in the realm of autoimmunity, and then maybe a little bit of a cancer topic when we talk about immune, and then other kind of allergy and disease states that we can start focusing on. So specifically, let's start with a little autoimmunity today, Dr. Wallace. What kind of things are you seeing out there with peptide treatments and ideas? And of course, this is all just basic information. Let me remind you all, this is not specifically saying these are the things that are appropriate for you guys out there.
Yeah. So everybody has their own individual case.
Correct.
In regards to that. So what I think both of us look at is the different responses in our body to immune function. So you have a pathogen and you have an immediate response. The body takes care of it, creates an antibody. And
okay.
So that pathogen comes in again, the body can recognize it faster and create a response.
Okay.
But in autoimmunity, which the same doctor that I loved in the past, you know, we talk about autoimmunity. Sometimes we call it auto-intoxication, which means that, let's say you have the gut, those types of things, then obviously it leads out into the bloodstream, the protein structure, the body doesn't recognize it, it's a circulating immune complex, and then I have an antibody that can create an autoimmune component.
Okay.
Sometimes the different systems in the body, immune function, TH1 and TH2, can get out of balance. And so we were talking about this yesterday about the cytokine. It's like obviously testing for it, which, you know, cytokines are more TH1, what cytokines are more TH2, those types of things. And then you can use certain peptides to try to bring balance back into that component. And one of them obviously is thymus and alpha-1.
Okay.
To go ahead and help on out, bring that balance in regards to how the immune system is either not over stimulated in regards to TH2 creating an autoimmune component, trying to go and bring the balance in between the TH1 and the TH2.
Okay.
So it's a good adjunct to go ahead and utilize. And we've had great success with utilizing this in regards to, you know, the history of obviously thymus and alpha, obviously from the thymus gland, which the body produces naturally, helps on that with viral components and bacterial components.
Okay.
And so we can actually utilize this to ramp on up the immune system, but obviously try to bring some balance into the immune system as well. And so when it comes to an autoimmune component, if we view it as necessary, especially if it's something basic, well, clean up your gut.
Right.
And honestly, all their symptoms go away, then it's fantastic. But if they clean up their gut and have other co-infections in regards to Lyme, mold, other bacteria, that's attacking their system. That's like it is a very good adjunct to go ahead and do in the whole system of things to try to bring all the community together, get in sequence, get in balance, and actually try to fight these pathogens.
Okay. Now, would you use thymus and alpha for just any autoimmune disease? Or would you say that it might be more specific towards lupus versus Hashimoto's, or, you know, lupus versus rheumatoid arthritis?
Mm-hmm. So, again, I think testing,
okay,
you know, the TH1, TH2, I think we'll go ahead and maybe dictate a little bit more of what the thymus and alpha can be utilized for. That's like, okay, I've had great results in, or seeing the studies and had results with all the TH2 component, the circulating immune complexes. And so I think it works better in that realm rather than, like I said, a TH1 dominant.
Okay, so you think it works better if you're TH2 dominant versus TH1 dominant with thymus and alpha?
Correct. So the studies state that. But again, okay, the studies also show that it just brings balance. So it is not going to go ahead and hurt. And obviously not going to exemplify, obviously, if you're TH1 dominant, you take thymus and alpha, then you also boom, you explode into the total TH1.
Right.
And start removing TH2. So, yes. So it had, in the studies, showed better results, but they are obviously practitioners in different forms, the International Peptide Society, that, you know, good results in regards to Hashimoto's.
With thymus and alpha as well, just because it's creating a balance between the TH1 and TH2.
Correct.
Because obviously Hashimoto's is an elevation of the TH1, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, and then things like lupus are more TH2 oriented, so better efficacy in the lupus world.
Yeah, eczema, okay, all those other things. But again, it's like, in my personal experience reading the studies, it's like I would utilize them both because it's usually an imbalance of these two systems.
Okay.
So I think as a peptide in regards to the immune system, I think it's one of the better ones to go ahead.
Okay, but we've also noticed when we're doing research about the overactivity of TH1 or TH2 immune or autoimmune conditions, there's also a lot of supplements out there that can negatively affect those conditions as well, right? So this is where learning from or doing proper research with a practitioner that kind of knows about the autoimmune condition itself is probably more appropriate than just going, oh, I'm just going to do this one thing, but I'm still going to take my ashwagandha or my astragalus, which will naturally exacerbate a TH1 response.
Yeah. So that's why I would say, so, you know, it's all about data for us. The more data we have, data points we have, the better off we can treat. And so if we know the cytokine aspect of like they're very high in TH1 and the cytokines that go with it, what kind of supplements can actually decrease that in regards to the TH1 for cumin, those types of things. But if someone is TH2 dominant,
right,
maybe it's not the greatest of things you can do, and maybe going to some other supplements or other herbals to actually really help them out with that.
Okay. What about pregnant? So there's we have a caller, which is obviously directed towards you. So I'll ask it for Stacy. Stacy is from New York. We're very happy that you've joined us today, Stacy. Stacy would like to know, what about pregnancy? How does this apply?
Well, it's like, that's the thing about peptides. I don't think they've done a whole lot of studies in regards to pregnancy. So I would not go ahead and want to go ahead and do stuff in pregnancy.
Well, especially in the immune world with pregnancy, because there are a lot of immune components going on. So if we're considering autoimmunity in pregnancy, I would say good supplementations that's safe in pregnancy. But with things like the TH1, TH2 balance, I would definitely wait after the fact. Right. Now, if you're talking more along the lines of fertility, Stacy, there are some amazing peptides that Dr. Wallace was actually reading to me. That says about how to enhance fertility utilizing peptide therapy.
Right. So again, so just within the studies, there are nothing to sit and say that this is safe. So in my practice or in our practice, it's like if someone comes in and they know they're pregnant, then like Dr. Sundermeyer said, stay with what is known. Work from that arena. But like Dr. Sundermeyer said, so now that you have an autoimmune component and you want to get pregnant, then we can go ahead and do some stuff to really bring balance, try to help, like I said, with oocyte formation, types of things. And then we can sit there and hopefully increase your rate of obviously viability if you don't get pregnant. So, but again, in pregnancy, there's nothing that really states in the literature, which, you know, everything changes because they're testing these more and more and more. But I
And then we'll learn.
So they're not going to technically test on anybody that's possibly pregnant, because if something does happen, then that puts it on.
All right. Well, Stacy, we hope that answered your questions. If you do have other questions, you can definitely contact us in the question parts of this video on Facebook, or you can shoot us a message at info@infusionhealth.org. We're going to take a couple second break because it sounds like Dr. Wallace's mic is a little off. So we'll be right back, you guys.
From myself, I've been spinning in circles, biding my time, but I can't blame this on anyone else. I'm breathing deep, I close my eyes, and I surrender. Thoughts, they soon subside, and I'm left alone, so I
So we apologize for that. It's like we left our lovely other headphones in California and our lovely trips back and forth. So
yes.
So I have to hold this thing now and make sure everybody can hear what I say.
And lean forward. Don't forget, you have to lean forward. That's perfect. Just stay right there. That'll be the spotlight statement.
Stay right there. Okay.
Yeah, just lean forward because you're using your computer right now.
Okay.
All right. So back to immune function and peptide therapy. Thanks everyone for dealing with our little intermission. Mm-hmm. So back to peptide and immune. So we were talking about really the balance between TH1, TH2 and appropriate peptides for that. We've kind of covered thymosin alpha and its uses, but I'm kind of curious if there's other things that thymosin alpha might be beneficial for.
So the thymosin alpha can obviously help in the repair process of the body. And so when we think about the immune system, you know, we mm-hmm. think about it only being utilized when we're sick. But the immune system comes in to go ahead and do a lot of other things in regards to damage to the system. And that can just be oxidative stress, damage to our DNA, damage to our tendons, damage to anything. So the immune system has to go ahead and be picked on up to actually do that function. And so I think in when we're perfectly healthy, you know, when we have undigested food, you know, just per se, it's like our immune system has to come in and actually help it digest that.
Okay.
So, you know, we can have a high increase of, like I said, white blood cells, those types of things actually digest our food. So when our immune system is functioning well, that means we're actually healing well, we're repairing well, we're not just fighting on off, you know, colds and viruses and bacteria. Okay. And so thymosin alpha can be utilized in the whole concept of increasing longevity because our immune system is running the show.
Now, if you're saying, now I'm just curious with what you just said, would you say that this is something beneficial for individuals dealing with like leaky gut syndrome or just a big inflammatory bowel disease that can support the inflammatory processes of the GI tract or even in the colon?
You're correct. And so, you know, like we talked about before, we obviously want to make sure that where everything else is covered, thymosin alpha can come into play to actually help with the healing and the repair. So now let's say your gut is perfectly fine. It's not porous anymore. And now, like typically we'd give an L-glutamine, you know, those types of things to help on out heal the colonicized butyric acid. But now we can incorporate thymosin alpha because it is going to go ahead and help the immune system actually go ahead and repair the tissue faster. Okay. Along with, you know, another one that we'll probably talk about in another podcast. In that regard.
Suspense.
I know. Suspense is
wait for book two. Now you have to wait for book two.
I know. Like the sequel.
And okay.
So another one that's been utilized is thymosin beta 4. Again, same concept. It goes ahead and helps on out with the components of viral and bacteria components, so it does work similar in the same mechanism. Works a little bit more possibly with a dendritic cell to the transport and the communication component of it. But TB4 obviously is utilized in a lot of angiogenesis as well. So if we have damage to the system, an old sprain.
What's angiogenesis exactly, Dr. Wallace?
Creating new capillary pathway. So if you have
new blood, small blood cells, basically, or blood vessels.
Correct. Coming to the area.
Okay.
And so it can help out. And that's one of the drawbacks possibly utilizing that for cancer, because we don't want to go ahead and have new blood cells or new, like I said, capillary going into the tumor site. So that's what I mean, seeing someone qualified. To make sure that they're doing what's appropriate so they're not going to actually exacerbate something that is not supposed to be increased.
Correct. Now, with cancer, you can use the combination of the two, or is that a false statement with thymosin beta and thymosin alpha?
So usually the studies more go towards thymosin alpha.
Okay.
The International Peptide Society. So again, there's all kinds of other ones that decrease angiogenesis at the site. But those are the ones that I haven't technically been trained in yet. I definitely read the research in that regards. And so we're learning more and more about it because they're somewhat new.
Okay.
But obviously, there's all kinds of other peptides that we can utilize to help on that with cancer in regards to increasing mitochondrial activity. And so that's obviously some of the focus on some of these cancers, utilizing different IVs like poly-MDA or DCA.
Okay.
There are different peptides that will actually increase mitochondrial health.
Okay.
Increase, like I said, or decrease insulin resistance, all of that. So there are some other ones that we utilize in regards to the whole metabolic process, not just like specifically targeted at the tumor site.
So now if we are, I think we're almost done with the concept of immunity, but I'm kind of curious. So sometimes people come in and I have multiple patients that are just repetitively and chronically ill. Repetitive cold and flus, tonsillitis, sore throats, ear infections, or just repetitive, again, flus. And I'm curious if any of these could be beneficial for individuals that are dealing with this. I just get sick all the time. My kids get sick. I get sick. My kids bring something home. They're not sick, but I get sick. You know, like I have a lot of patients that I think it's a lot of wear and tear. They're just exhausted to begin with. But is there something within the repertoire, you know, within this information that could be beneficial for people in that realm?
Yeah. So, well, so that's a tough one because if it's just immune, then thymus and alpha can come into play as well
okay.
as possibly BPC and another one in that regard. But if it's because they're always ill, like you said, because their cortisol levels are just in the tank, and that decreases
right. The
body's ability to make a response, then utilizing a growth hormone releasing peptide can actually increase steroidogenesis, and that can lead to a little bit better cortisol. And so you're picking them up in that standpoint, in that regards, to help raise up their cortisol levels. Their body will naturally go ahead and help on out with some of their immune function.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, testing them for all kinds of things. So if they have a bacterial or a virus, there are some antivirals in regards to inflammation. You know, I've been just throwing numbers out there. LL37 is another one that's actually fighting off a pathogen. And so okay. if people have a candida bacterial infection, you can actually with peptide that actually will break down that cellular wall of that virus or basically of the bacteria and allows your body to recognize it and attack it.
Okay.
So there are ones specifically designed to mimic that process in the body.
Okay.
So there are some ones out there that will go ahead and actually influence that. But like again, the worn down patient, you know, I don't sleep. And then I have five kids. I work 10 hours. Then I come home and then I party on the weekend.
So it might be something just, again, a situation that's more than just a peptide, although there could be some support, especially if it's along the lines of like the HPA access or low cortisol due to just wear and tear.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, it's like, I'm going to put out a post there. I'm on my 10th day of testing Tessamarlin, a growth hormone, releasing hormone and peptide.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel good in that regards. I feel like my body can recover faster in regards to the workouts, and that is when I say run down.
Okay.
And I've just read good studies that it actually helps increase testicular function of the lated cell.
So and for so men, maybe dealing with sperm motility issues or even low sperm counts when dealing with fertility issues, maybe.
Or low testosterone. And so
the
concept of like, well, your testosterone is low, let's give you exogenous testosterone, but now, well, let's see what other pathway might be potentiated to actually help on out with that. And so growth hormone has been shown to go ahead and improve that. And that's one of the things that we talked about or I read to you last night, which I found a fantastic article on PubMed. So
yeah. Well, and I think it's important to remember that true growth hormone is not the same thing as what we're talking about when we say growth hormone. I think that's a really important thing. So this is an omnitrope or nordotrope. I think nordotropin, omnitropin, something like that is the name of them. These are not actual just growth hormone injections. I think that's really important. This is the, when we're talking about growth hormone, I think you said releasing peptide.
Mm-hmm.
It's naturally supporting your own growth hormones release and enhancing that release because we actually do have people that are growth hormone deficient because they've just depleted themselves. Yeah. So encouraging, like Dr. Wallace was saying, building the cortisol level, giving better nutrition into the body, and then encouraging your own natural growth hormone to increase, utilizing these peptides can be beneficial. Now, not the same thing as just giving a single injection of growth hormone.
Yeah.
Now, when we talk about things like growth hormone releasing peptides or growth hormone secreting peptides, what is the biggest difference, would you say, between a peptide versus an actual growth hormone injection?
So obviously, I think the negative, the feedback loop is still intact. So it's the same concept of taking exogenous testosterone. You're taking it, so your body's going to sit there and say, well, I no longer need to utilize it. I'm obviously glands atrophy.
Okay.
And so if you're taking growth hormone just as growth hormone, it can have other detrimental effects as well, possibly increased insulin resistance, increased blood glucose if utilized long-term, those types of things. In regards to the releasing peptide, you know, it goes to the anterior pituitary, or it goes with growth hormone releasing hormone to the pituitary to release the growth hormone. And then it survives this natural process. Plus, we find more that there's different types of subcategories of growth hormone utilized. And so when you stimulate that, it's releasing all the factors or all the different types of growth hormone rather than just one specific type, which we're learning more and more about.
Right, which is kind of the biggest, I think, benefits of a peptide over just a basic growth hormone injection is that you're not just injecting growth hormone subtype one, we'll say. We now are learning, I read something, and I'm sure that this is wrong because I'm, again, just in the forefront of peptide therapy, but there's 4 or 5 different growth hormone types. Is that correct, Dr. Wallace?
And so, yeah, and I'm learning more and more about them as well. So I'm like, like with commenting, I know some of it, but we might talk about it a little bit more in detail in like the next one, just because with this paper that I went ahead and found, it describes all of those facts and how they actually influence different processes in the body and how they actually can be utilized to increase insulin, like I said, sensitivity rather than decrease it if you're just utilizing one subset or one injection of a growth hormone.
Oh, okay. Now, when we're dealing with aging, because I know a big part of medicine today is anti-aging and this idea of, you know, I want to either live forever or at least I want to feel good for the length of my life, right?
Yeah.
And that's kind of where Dr. Wallace and myself came up with the idea of this life enhancement medicine. It's less about anti-aging because we still want to age. We still naturally are going to age. You don't get to stay 30 forever. We get wrinkles, right? But there are peptides that we can use to enhance not only connective tissue, joint repair, muscle integrity, but there's also things that help support cognition, right? Mm-hmm. So with the idea of aging, I'm kind of curious how people are using peptides today.
Mm-hmm. So again, I didn't, you know, we came up with life enhancing medicine because I could probably dye my beard.
You would look 20.
And I might look 10 years younger, so that's technically anti-aging.
Right.
Exactly, but I did not enhance.
Botox is also anti-aging, no more wrinkles, right?
You know, a better haircut, which unfortunately I don't have. And so those are things, that's why we came with life enhancement. So so let's talk about the theories of aging. So again, we have the oxidative stress, or we have basically cellular signaling, the telomere length. It's like as it replicates, the more fast it replicates, the telomere length goes lower, slower and slower, gets smaller and smaller.
Just for everybody that doesn't quite get what a telomere is, where are telomeres found, Dr. Wallace?
Well, DNA. And so if you can imagine a shoelace, and at the very end of the shoelace has that cap at the shoelace and keeps everything nice and wound up, mm-hmm. everything tight. Well, if we start to take that away, it starts to fray on out.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't want that in regards to our DNA or telomeres. And so
that's actually what they're saying increases aging and even makes it more rapid. Is that correct?
Yeah. And so
a loss in telomere length is a big deal when it comes to rapid aging.
Yeah. And so they have their free radical theory, the glycosylated kind of like theory in regards to, you know, our sugars and stuff like that. So the biggest thing is, let's say, oxidative stress. And so increasing the cell length. And so we talked about the hayflick limit in regards to, here's a cell culture, the fibroblast, has a replication of 30 times and then it dies on off. Well, you can use certain peptides that will increase that length of the cell, still have it go through its basic process to go to apoptosis. So there are things to actually improve that. So you can imagine if you can get rid of oxidative stress, the free radical formation, that's obviously linked into Alzheimer's, and, neurodegenerative changes. Mm-hmm. So there's different peptides. I'll just throw a couple out there, epiphalon or epithalin.
Okay.
That's been utilized to increase telomerase and actually increase the telomerase.
And what kind of benefits would people see if they had their telomeres naturally increased just with utilizing something like epithalon?
So they're not going to know themselves degenerating as fast. So hopefully help your skin. Mm-hmm. They're going to have better cognition.
Okay.
They're going to have better energy.
Who doesn't want a better brain and energy?
A brain. Yeah, well, exactly. And so that can come into play. Another one called GHKCU, which is a copper.
Okay.
Reading more and more about how this copper, obviously peptide, and decreases oxidative stress, decreases, like I said, inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously helps with skin and the collagen formation and the cross-linking and those types of things. And so these two peptides are part of our life enhancement protocol for people that want to go ahead and stay younger, younger feeling and younger looking. So they do have good studies in regards to seeing someone that has, unfortunately, a crappy lifestyle. And so how epithalin works, so if you've had a crappy lifestyle and your telomere shortens, what it does then, it stops that from shortening any further. So you may be 20 and have a telomere of a 50-year-old, but now if you clean up your lifestyle and you take epithalin, now you can be 80 and you still have that telomere of a 50-year-old. It's not going to lengthen it on off.
Okay.
So go ahead and slow and stop the process of that telomere basically duplicating and basically starting to deteriorate. And so.
So if I want to stay in my 30s forever, I start taking it now.
You start taking it now.
Oh, I could look like this forever?
Well, it can look like that forever. it's like, well, let's try it out.
Try it out, right?
Let's try it out. But it does have good studies in regards to helping out with that and all the oxidative stress and the disease process that happen from aging.
Okay.
And so I think the three that I've been researching and seeing people utilize in ourselves is epithalin, the GHKCU, and then the MOTC peptide.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously with the mitochondria and oxidative stress, how it increases alpha and then AMP, which are these two things that the body needs to actually help with its energy processes. And so keep those three things healthy, you're going to notice it's like your body's actually starting to function better.
Okay. Very cool. So we have epithalon or how epithalin and GHK.
CU.
CU for copper.
For copper.
All right. So things to help with. Now, would you say utilizing a growth hormone releasing peptide or secreting peptide would also be beneficial to support aging?
Yeah. So, I think the only limiting factor, in the process of utilizing peptides is unfortunately the cost.
Right.
So we have patients, that can afford the moon and, the sky's the limit.
Right.
So, the CEOs and stuff like that, they'll do what they need to do to increase brain function, to make sure that they're entrepreneurs, that they can stay on top of tasks in that regard. But the majority of people that it's like, well, I just want to feel better. It's like the growth hormone, releasing hormone, and the peptide works fantastic on its own because it helps so many other bodily processes from that standpoint.
And right.
And then I'd probably do something like epithalon or epithalon.
To help support, not only just be cognizant of price, but also just be aware of like the benefits of what a growth hormone can do to a system as a whole, right? Because it acts on every cell.
Yeah.
Right?
There's basically a receptor site for growth hormone in pretty much every cell. Obviously, we talk about one of our first ones, the foundations of health. So if you're doing those things, obviously taking supplements to support the mitochondria, those types of things, helping with neuro, like I said, benefits, then you can go ahead and live a nice, healthy, comfortable life.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, we're going to run out of time as we start this next topic. So this is where we'll also begin on our next podcast. But I'm kind of curious about growth, or not growth hormone, but healing when it comes to peptide use. Mm-hmm. So I think healing is a really big deal, because I personally have shoulder pain, shoulder, I don't know if it's a full degeneration at this point, but man, my arm goes numb every day. When I wake up, I have hip pain. I can't run, because apparently you and another great physical therapy individual can point on this perfect spot on my knee, and it's just painful. And I can feel how clunky my knees are. I'm kind of curious if there are things out there that we can do to not only support old injuries, because, you know, when you're 15, you think you can play through any injury when it's a soccer, softball, or basketball game, football game, right? Mm-hmm. But now we're 20 years out and in our 30s and 40s and 50s, and we're getting to a place where it's like, well, where do we go from here now? Because now I wake up and everything hurts.
Right. So obviously this will probably be talked about a little bit more into our next podcast, just because like 3 minutes to go.
Yeah.
You're stimulating a peptide to try to increase the healing properties within your body. So if it's an old injury and your body hasn't healed correctly, because, you know, we went straight to an NSAID or you stopped that cascade, there are different things you can take. And obviously one of them is BPC-157 that actually takes the healing cytokine response to get vascular endothelial growth factor, fibroblast growth factor.
Which are basically just a really lot of fancy words for saying healing factors.
Yeah, just healing factors, you know. And so those are the things that can be done. It can be taken oral, which has studies behind it. You can actually inject it sub-Q at spot. So if you have a tendonitis in the elbow, you can actually inject it at the site of the elbow.
Okay. So
there are obviously great studies with it. And then the other one combined with it is thymus and beta 4. So again, if you have an old injury that does not have a proper blood flow, you can utilize that. It increases, like I said, angiogenesis to the site. So if you have an old ligament injury, those types of things, cartilage injury, which is not too vascular, it can go ahead and assist with the whole thing process.
And I think some really cool things with a patient that we had had, he is a really cool guy, but he rides motorcycles a ton, right? And he said he could only lift his elbow to this, right? And I know that everyone can't see it. So it's basically, I can lift my arm just all the way out at a 90 degree angle, but it cannot go above my head. And he said that had been happening for years. And he took the BPC-157 and obviously met with Dr. Wallace and kind of cleaned things up a bit. And he came in one day and he was like, look, I can lift my hand above my head just by using, you know, some lifestyle modifications, some supportive nutrients, and obviously this peptide, which I thought was, one, super cool, because, you know, who doesn't deserve to lift their arm above their head?
Yeah.
But also just, you know, really amazing work when it comes to utilizing something to enhance your healing factors for something that was old.
Yeah. So I think the whole process is just feed the body well.
Right.
Well, give it the peptide to induce a response and just get out of the way.
Well, I think that we're about out of time. So this was Introduction to Peptides, and we started talking a little bit about some stuff today. We'll continue in our next podcast, Peptides Part 2, in a couple of weeks. So stay tuned. Find us on Instagram to see when our next is up, and take a look at the CTR Network, and you can learn when we're doing our next show as well. If you have any questions, Dr. Wallace is available to answer them. Through our website. We hope you guys have learned something, or at least created a little bit of intriguing information for you to take forward.
Yeah.
And we really appreciate you all joining us here. Stacy, I hope we got your question answered. And
And
learn more about peptides.
Anybody, we'll see you at the A4M. In December, more peptides.
I know we have another training, and I get to take a training this time, which I'm super excited about.
All right, everybody.
All right, you guys. I'm Dr. Sundermeyer, and of course, we were Q&A Dr. Wallace, and we are with Life Enhancement Medicine Hour. Join us. I think we have recordings every Thursday at 2, but we'll do a next live show in November. We look forward to seeing you guys soon, and have a great afternoon, everyone.
Right,
I think we did our job well.
You've been listening to the Life Enhancement Medicine Hour with Dr. Wallace and Dr. Sundmeyer, bringing the power of health to your listening ears. You can learn more by visiting infusionhealth.org. That's infusionhealth.org. Follow them on social media and join the movement to better health.
Coming to you straight out of the shell, this is WMUT The Nut. Hello, caller.
They're lying to you.
Must be a first-time caller.
You think this is funny? They're fried in oil.
What's fried in oil?
Your nuts.
My nuts?
Uh-oh.
No, your precious snack nuts are fried in oil.
Ugh.
Fisher Oven Roasted Never Fried Nuts are never fried. They're just nuts oven roasted with sea salt. That's it.
Mmm.
Now, go look for the red-topped can.
Fisher Oven Roasted Never Fried Nuts. Never fried, nothing to hide.
Indian gaming casinos are doing wonders for our tribal communities. But with all the good comes a hidden danger, problem gambling. But there is help. The Arizona Division of Problem Gambling offers resources and counseling to help people understand and manage their gambling problem and start taking steps forward in their recovery. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 and start solving your problem gambling.